everyone. This is Frank Shines. I'm joined today with my brother.
Grandison Shines.
Hey, Grandison, how you doing today?
Good, man. How are you?
Hey, doing great. You know, I got this music playing in the background. This is Ray Charles, you know, one of the greatest of all time. He's singing that song, Them That Gots Is Them That Gets.
I like it. It's nice.
So the reason we're playing this song is because the topic of today is led in equality, but left out upward mobility. And in our chapter on led in equality and left out upward mobility in our book, Led In But Left Out, we talked about how Ray Charles meets Raj Chetty. And you'll get to know Raj Chetty here in just a moment. I think most of you have heard of Ray Charles. Right. One of his great pieces of work was a song called Them That Gots Is Them That Gets. He goes on to use this quote about, it's the people who've got the money who get the money, right? In other words, it takes money to make money type of thing.
Right.
And so when we look at what's happening with inequality, I think you can see a similar message that he understood back in the 50s and 60s, even though he wasn't necessarily an economist. And we're gonna talk about Raj Chetty, who fast forward 50 years later, uses big data and algorithms and the current COVID environment to really explain what's happening with regards to inequality and this lack of upward mobility. So Grandison, we're gonna jump right into this topic. Anything you wanna open up with? How are things back there in Arizona? I'm back here in Tampa, Florida.
Yeah, I'm just keeping my eyes on the current climate, of course. When I say climate, the coronavirus climate, it's of course surging. And people, unfortunately, are still acting like there isn't a pandemic going on right now. But hey, we just, on our little ecosystem over here, we're keeping it nice, safe, and clean. So that's about it, really. Keep an eye on the prize, as they say.
Yeah, I hear you. We're doing the same thing out here, trying to stay safe. In fact, we had a great a family event for those of you who are listening in. It's November 29th. That we're recording this right after Thanksgiving. And we had a great Thanksgiving Day event. In fact, Uncle in Chicago just called to congratulate us. He had heard how well it went. We had about 29-30 sessions on Zoom and about an average of about two or three people per session. So we're somewhere around 60 to 90 people at different points during that virtual family reunion for the Strouds and Shineses, and that was just a lot of fun. So that was the thing that we've been doing out here to stay safe from the coronavirus, but the numbers are ticking up and we just hope you guys are all being safe out there.
Absolutely. Perfect.
Well, let's go ahead and move through our discussion. We're going to talk about a little bit about what's in the news, and then we'll return to our specific topic on letting in inequality and leaving out upward mobility. I'll just start with the unfortunate sad news. Tony Tsai, the founder of Zappos, that you know ultimately was purchased and by Amazon, great tech entrepreneur, died at age 46. His family reported they didn't go into any details about the cause of his death, but really just an unfortunate and sad situation. Quite an entrepreneur,
young guy too, 46 years old.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I wrote the book about, you know, about happiness and importance for happiness at work and the whole focus on keeping your customers happy and really was a whirlwind force. So sad to see us lose that great entrepreneur.
Absolutely. Very true.
On a lighter note, Elon Musk moved up to becoming the second richest person in the world. Now just behind Jeff Bezos. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he just surpassed Bill Gates. So what do you think about that? The news of Elon Musk moving up, does that mean anything? Is it just one of those up and down things going on with the stock and his sales quarters and things of that sort? Or do you think there's something longer term there?
Yeah, I think it's definitely in line we're talking about, just like the song, you know, the rich get richer. And that point, even during this pandemic, it's funny because I was just talking to another gentleman who works for Tesla, and he was saying that they just announced a lower price on the Model S to compete with Lucid, their air product, and that's something that is even spawning more orders for Tesla. So finally, here they turned a profit, which is good. And now it's all about, hey, I mean, it's like you said, that's past Bill Gates and right underneath Jeff Bezos there. So it's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds, with even with some of the technical issues that they're having at the moment with their vehicles.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. Trying to do a lot really fast. I know Volkswagen has come out recently as well, talking about they're trying to get to a certain level, 20,000-25,000 or less for electric vehicles. So I'm sure there's Elon and Tesla, they're feeling the pressure from that as well.
Absolutely.
The other one we had the news that kind of ties back into cars, and that we'll talk about as we go through this discussion on inequality. California has approved driverless taxis, essentially. First time that companies can now charge for driverless rides. And so it's going to be interesting to see the impact that has across other parts of the country. As go California, so go many other states, as the trends have typically shown, not all the time, but many times. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I heard about that, but I don't recall which manufacturer that was. Not Waymo, was it?
Obviously Waymo's doing more work down in Arizona, probably more so than California. Yeah. But I think I think it was kind of a blanket statement around, any of those any of the companies that would want to do it. But I'm not sure if it was spearheaded by one specific company. We can certainly look that up as we talk through the rest of this session.
Definitely interesting, because the artificial intelligence is becoming more and more prevalent, not only for driverless cars, but in the factories. Tesla's also talking about having even more robotics. Amazon also more robotics. There's going to be a lot of job opportunities. Well, I should say less job opportunities coming on soon on the factory floor as they continue to roll out artificial intelligence and machine learning robotics. It's going to be a big gap there in terms of the unemployment, from my perspective. Of course, it'll trickle in, but who knows? It may just come all at once. And I don't want to say all at once, but it's going to come a big wave, I should say, a growing wave of more and more people losing those factory jobs because of artificial intelligence, machine learning.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. you look at the trucking industry and all the other areas that can
trucking industry as well
be impacted. Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Transportation is one of the highest employed industries in our country. So as those things fall by the wayside, and a lot of evidence showing that it's going to happen, and insurance rates will be too high to allow for humans to drive a lot of vehicles in the coming years, if that holds true, because it's much safer to use autonomous vehicles, and it's going to drive a lot of people out of a lot of jobs.
That's just crazy. Interesting. Interesting.
Okay, let's turn our attention to the topic at hand. Let in inequality, but left out upward mobility. A few words that you guys are probably hearing out there, preppers, the folks who are preparing for the end of days. But that group, that population, is much bigger than that, and it's growing apparently as more and more people are displaced by coronavirus. They're looking to get away from big urban communities and cities. They also are feeling the pressure of income, and consequently, just to make ends meet, they're turning to more prepper type of a mentality. Mm-hmm. The recession, right? It's been called the she session because it's disproportionately negatively impacting women. Women are they make up a larger percentage of the healthcare industry. Than men do. Same with the education, K-12 education, education in general, as well as mothers, right, that are responsible for taking care of the family, and they're feeling all the pressures as children can't go to school and they have to, fend for the kids and somehow, work at the same time, but stay home for the kids and for the kids that can't go into schools. I mean, this is just a really tough situation. What are you seeing? What have you guys filling around the she session and preppers and all of this.
Definitely hearing about that, the she session and even the preppers, but the she session, it's ironic because there's been many conversations stimulated on the fact that women earn 70% of the dollar. Mm-hmm. And there's some argument to that when people are positioning their sides of the story, that women take on jobs that have tend to be more nurturing type of jobs. Those are in the healthcare industry, of course, being the single mothers and, or I mean, not single mothers, just mothers that mm-hmm. are stay-home mothers and taking care of more of the family and the children in that respect, and in the education field. So it's going to be, I feel that we're going to have even more conversations now, because what I don't see because of the recession is that there may be some increase in the if salaries, right? So it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out and how that's positioned as well, because that has already been a factor in terms of the argument with why women learn or earn less, 70% of the dollar compared to men. So I know that's going to be coming. Probably going to hear much more conversations centered around that. Interesting to see how that's going to fare out.
Yeah, it's just really unfortunate with more women losing their jobs than men. There's you know, growing evidence that this is going to set back women. Some are saying, you know, well over a decade, right? The amount of time is going to be to make that up. And I guess if you just run the numbers, it probably makes sense, right? By the time we roll out the pandemic and everything, mm-hmm. roll out the vaccines, and everyone gets vaccinated, we're probably going to be well into 2 years through this thing. And then that means women have been out of the job market for that time. Now they got to make up those 2 years.
Right.
And that's not going to happen overnight, because, you know, just the whole transition is probably another year or so. And then there's going to be a lot of trepidation, and there's even questions about whether or not many of these jobs, as they go away, some of these jobs are not going to come back. They're going to get automated, like in the ways that we were just talking about with AI and drivers and those sorts of things. But there are other areas where the same type of thing is going to happen. And if true, and if from these initial looks at the way the education industry might also change, where whether K through 12 or universities, maybe we've got less kids going back to school, doing more virtual classes. That may put, again, additional constraints on women of the household, you know, as a caretaker, as you touched on, which could, you know, then delay that ability for women to get back into the workplace.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of, there's this, I can see where some of these numbers are showing that it could be up to a decade of lost opportunities for women as we look to turn this thing back around.
That's very significant. I mean, that's a long time. When you put it into perspective, a whole decade is a very long time for that to even recover to be, and they were still working on getting women even more up into the marketplace, breaking this glass ceiling. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this is going to play out within the next decade, like you're talking about.
Yeah, all those gains that they were, mm-hmm. you know, fought so hard for, right?
Sure.
Our parents, moms, and our sisters, and you know, and then now they've got to retool again. The Hillbilly Elegy is another example. The Appalachian community and in the book around this whole story of the individuals in the coal mining industries and in other industries around, you know, Kentucky and Virginia, West Virginia, these locations, they're feeling the pressure, right? I mean, the coal industry is not coming back, despite what some people may say. And same with regards to manufacturing industry and so many places right. that have been stripped, areas around General Motors and Ford and Chrysler, where I've done a lot of work with some of the big three automobile companies. It's being labeled as what's called a useless class, a class of individuals that the government, right, doesn't make money off of them in terms of taxes, so has no interest in them. The companies have no real interest in them because they don't have the high tech skills or capabilities, things perhaps that they're looking for. Right. And then the military is becoming increasingly automated and smaller. And so the military isn't necessarily attracting these individuals. In fact, a big chunk of this, what they call this useless class, which obviously is not a great term to use. It's one that was first coined by Yuval Harari of Sapiens and Homo Deus, the international best-selling books. But he saw this as, not necessarily inevitable, right? We have agency. We can do something about these things. We can train and retrain and retool people. But if we don't, we're going to have this huge useless class of individuals that there's no value, economic value
Yeah,
that can be taken
exactly.
from them, and consequently, no one wants them, so to speak.
And that can have a huge economic effect as well, because those people will be, of course, trying to make sure they turn to some sort of resources to the government. It's going to be one of the first places, I feel, of course. And then there's the whether there's support there or not is another question, especially long term. And if so, how long is that going to be supported? Or how long will they be supported? In fact, I'm going to watch the, I think Netflix has a movie, a documentary about hillbilly elegy. I'm going to watch that one as well. I'm meaning to take a look at that.
I checked it out last week.
You did?
Great film. Well done. Book, very good as well. But Ron Howard
Ron
directed
Howard,
it.
right? Yeah, Ron Howard. Yeah.
And
So
then there's,
that's
the
significant.
essential workers, right?
Oh, yeah.
And more recently they said, no, they're not the essential workers, the expendable workers, the way we're using them, right? Where, they've hired late levels of coronavirus, they get paid the least amount. They're
Sure.
forced to continue to work under very harsh and risky conditions.
Risky conditions, absolutely.
So are they expendable or essential?
Right. Yeah, that is the question, because they are, of course, and they have to supply their own PPE, of course, and ones that I've seen, especially when you go to the grocery store or some other places, it may not be as up to grade as the N95 or some of the other masks. But yeah, there's a big question there, and it's just something that will definitely need to be addressed as well, right? Because we're going to see that these people who are, quote, expendable or essential workers be on the line of being more expendable, and they'll just replace with someone else when something happens, and then make sure that if that person gets sick or something happens, okay, replace. And that's gonna, so my thought process is, when we were talking about this, is going to filter into some of the hillbilly elegy, right? So some of those essential workers, it doesn't require a tremendous amount of skill, but it does, it depends on where you are, but like that, like for instance, a grocery store, a stock or something like that, that one is not as essential. But when you talk about medical professionals,
Right,
well,
exactly.
professional or essential workers, yeah, that's, and they're feeling the brunt of it. They're feeling a lot of it. And that's one of the things that I've been listening to this past week, is how a lot of them have been coming on the radio talking about some of the issues that they're going through, and how people are just like, they're very nonchalant about it.
Yeah, taking them for
And
granted.
not, yeah, and the hospitals are getting full and they're overworked and tired and working multiple shifts. It's something that needs to be addressed as well, for sure.
No doubt about it. I mean, despite the fact that we may be expending them, they are not expendable. They cannot be quickly replaced. And
Right.
these people
Exactly.
are, they're the warriors. Talk
Right,
about
yeah.
going to a biological warfare,
Yeah.
biological war, and we're not giving these people the equipment and support, and all the things that we should be doing. When people go
Absolutely.
out, when the troops go out and fight a war for us, right, the country should be behind them. And on the other hand, we choose not to. We're not wearing the mask, we're not social distancing, and we're just increasing the burden, the pain, the psychological wear and tear on some of our most
Absolutely.
important people.
Absolutely. And that's a shame to have to know front line that people are thinking that way, even though they see other opportunities happening around them, and they still think it's something that's more of a hoax than something that is actually real. It's crazy.
Well, when we opened the book, we opened with a quote by Jamie Dimon, the chairman and CEO of JP Morgan Chase & Company. And this was back in April of 2019. He wrote, "The American dream is alive, but fraying for many."
Right.
And when we look at, you know, what's the rationale behind that, we'd like to kind of touch on some of those elements. You know, back to another Netflix movie, we were talking about Hillbilly Elegy that recently came out on Netflix. Another one is American Factory, Academy Award winning movie, was also presented during the Sundance Festival. Excellent film. I don't know if you had a chance to watch it yet, Granison, but it's about a Chinese billionaire who takes over a closed GM factory just outside of Dayton, Ohio. And it chronicles, you know, the opening of the plant and several of the individuals. Let me just touch on three of the characters that are included in the film. So one is this guy, Bobby. He's a furnace offloader. And one of his comments during the movie was that for a year and a half, I didn't have anything, right? GM shut down, the plant shut down, and literally he couldn't find any work for over a year and a half. Jill, who's a forklift operator, her condition had gotten so bad, she lost her house. She lost all of her vehicles. And, you know, her quote was, I've been living in my sister's basement ever since. And then another glass operator, Shawnee, she said that at General Motors, where I used to work, I was making $29 an hour. But at Fuyao, this glass company, this Chinese glass company, I make $12.84. That those are just real life stories of the eroding middle class. And we've seen it, you know, in parts of our family, our uncles who used to be in a manufacturing plants. My coach used to be at Boeing. He was an engineer, right? Summarily dismissed. He is at 17, 18 years. And they walked in, handed him his pink slip and, you know, gave him a I think it was a two month type of a pay and benefits, and that was it, right? Despite his almost 18 years with the company.
Oh yeah, yeah. Talk about expendable. You don't hear, of course, the pensions are going away and are gone, and it's really sad that you can work with an organization for that tenure and to walk in one day and have that happen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's mind boggling, but it's shattering to the person's ego and everything they knew about and all the respect they had for the company as well.
Yeah. Now we look at the gig economy, right? I mean, now we've got, you know, two generations of workers that don't even know what a pension means, right? It's just, exactly. It's so foreign. When I left IBM, it was the last company that had pensions, and they rolled out, they got rid of their pension, I think about 2 or 3 years after I left the company, but you just don't see it anymore. So imagine these individuals who are part of the gig economy, no benefits, low pay. At any point you can be dismissed. There's no allegiance of that company to you.
No allegiance at all. No allegiance.
So if those are kind of, you know, anecdotal stories, right? Whether it's, you know, talking about Shawnee or Jill or Bobby or, you know, my coach, here's the reality. Here are the numbers, the stark reality. If you go back to 1945, and for those of you who are just listening at the podcast and not able to see these images, you can just see a downward slope, okay? And this downward slope goes from 1945 to 1985. And it looks at the percentage of Americans that made more money than their parents. So back in 1945, it was in excess of 90% of the kids would go on to make more money than their parents. Today, that number is about 50%. My understanding is it's now dropped below 50% recently. So less than half of the people are making more money than their parents. Now just think about that, right? I mean, that's just not sustainable for a democracy, which must have a middle class. If, you know, fully half of your people are now getting at a point, and numbers show that about half of Americans are at or near poverty rates in terms of their average salary and income, then we are stripping out our middle class. And without a middle class, you have no long-term ability to retain a democracy. The other
That's true.
figure that we look at here, turn this over to you here, Grandison, is more recently during this coronavirus period. So this is looking at time period from March through October 1st. And if you look at the high wage employment individuals, those people making, say, over $60,000, the recession for them was very flat. It dropped by about 12%. And then by May, it started picking up, and now it's pretty much recovered all of its loss in terms of the number of jobs that were lost and the unemployment rate. On the other hand, if you look at the recovery rate of the low wage employment individuals, those making less than $27,000, they dipped down to 40% by May, and they've only recovered about half of that. So they're only about 19, 20% recovered. So 40% drop, and they bounce back only 20% at a much slower rate than the others. And that's kind of where we are right now. So the recession, you know, we talk about a she session. It's a recession that's like a some people describe it as a K-shaped recovery, meaning those who bounce back very fast and have the money, theirs is the V part of the K. And then those who are the essential workers and individuals who get displaced, restaurants, right? The airline industry, nightclubs, travel, cruise lines, those sorts of things, their recovery has not even begin to come back up. And so that's the downward part of that K. So some people refer to this recovery as a K-shaped recovery because there's two very distinct classes that are being impacted in very different ways.
Very different ways, absolutely. Yeah.
So the question is, so what can we do about this? I'm just telling a little story here, Grandison. You know, when I was back in California, where I grew up there, you know, we grew up in the Bay Area there. There was what was known as the Oakland Assembly Line in that 1962, 1964 timeframe was switched over to the GM assembly plant. So they moved it from Oakland to Fremont, California. Again, right there in the Bay Area, but and so the Fremont plant stayed in place, the General Motors Fremont plant, it stayed in place until 1982. It had the worst quality, the highest number of labor grievances and issues. I remember talking with some of the people out there. Literally, people would come in drunk. They would be drinking in the back, you know, in the back cafeteria area and in the restrooms and all sorts of things. It was just a complete mess. And ultimately, they shut down the plant because of all the quality and labor issues and so forth, productivity issues. 2 years later, it was reopened as part of a joint venture between Toyota and General Motors. And it was renamed the New United Motors Manufacturing Incorporated. And during my graduate years, yeah, so I, when I was, you know, before. When I was going to graduate school out in at McClellan Air Force Base, where I was stationed at the time in Sacramento, I spent time out at the NUMMI plant learning about lean manufacturing from Jesse Wingard, who was a plant manager at that time. And as part of that relationship, PBS, you know, allowed me to bring a crew in, and we did a PBS television special, 1 hour television special on the Toyota manufacturing environment. But the primary focus of what that B-roll was to understand why was it that so many people in America were at that time saying, you know, the Japanese are taking over, American can't compete in quality with the Japanese and all these sorts of, you know, this kind of nonsense. And that it was purely because of cultural reasons. The culture of the Japanese was just different than the culture of Americans, and therefore Americans couldn't make the same type of high quality product, blah, 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 right? Well, under this GM Toyota joint venture, the management hired back 85% of the same employees. So that plant became a sterling model of high quality, high productivity, and low labor grievances of just about any General Motor plant in the entire country. And it received all sorts of awards. So it just goes to show that when we take the time and we invest in people and we train people and we develop people and we show trust, right? We develop the trust. One of the trust elements that was put in place with the union was that even if we improve productivity, we would not fire anyone. And so they got the loyalty of the employees, they got the loyalty of the labor unions, and they proved that over time. And consequently, all of those things, in addition to the approaches to management using lean principles and Six Sigma tools and analytics and data and these sorts of things, really led to a night and day difference, even though you have this pretty much the same number, the same employees.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And fast forward, 2010 comes, well, 2008 came, the Great Recession. By 2009, the conditions had gotten so bad, you know, General Motors had to declare bankruptcy. I was up in Michigan at the time. I was spending time with Chrysler working on a project with them when the Great Recession hit, and ultimately General Motors had to declare bankruptcy. And so the NUMMI plant was shut down in 2010.
Right.
Now, at that time, the company had about 5,500 employees that lost their job. But later in 2010, it opened up. Well, Tesla gained ownership of it. And later, they opened it up, created the Tesla plant. They now have 10,000 employees working there today. But it's no longer like the 1960s and 80s manufacturing of a traditional assembly line. It's no longer a true, pure, only lean manufacturing based upon Japanese, you know, Japanese principles of management. It's now an AI-powered, extreme lean and clean electronic vehicle type of environment, right? Just a completely new way of thinking about manufacturing. And that really gets to the heart of where we want to go next. We've talked about the fact that we've got inequality. We can wait around and wait for government to bail us out. We surely should do all do our part to push our local governments, to push our federal and state governments to make changes, make opportunities available, train, develop, reskill people. But I would not place my bet on the government coming to save you. So consequently, here are some of the recommendations that we have that we talk about in the book for taking advantage of the reality of the new world, the new trends, kind of understanding where those trends are going and developing the skills and capabilities and adaptability to be in a position where rather than being, you know, that 40 or 50% that are not making more money than their parents in coming generations. You're part of that group that's on that upward swing that's going up with productivity. Some of you have probably seen this curve where it shows productivity of the United States over, you know, over multiple decades, going back to the 1920s and 1930s. And it shows productivity is going up, right? Just imagine kind of an upward slope. And wages followed that same productivity curve until 1977. And then it started moving in reverse and flattened out. That flattening is what we've seen with most of the middle class in America. Right. The middle class and others, that roughly 60, 70% of the population have not seen an increase in their wages. Most of that money has gone to the top 15, 20% of the country. And that's the productivity gain that continues to go up with the high employed individuals. So what we want to do is get you guys on that upward curve, not on that flat curve. So what can we do about it? I think there's some examples, right, Grandison? Amazon, Shopify, Tesla. I think they provide some clues. I'll hit on a couple things, roll it out over to you, let you get your comments in here.
Okay.
So one is, my background has been in this whole area of, after leaving the Air Force and flying, I spent time in the Air Force my last several years working as what's known as a management engineer, was a combination of management consulting for the Department of Defense and industrial engineering. Mm-hmm. And that's where I got my exposure to Dr. Deming and Dr. Michael Harry and Jesse Wingard and learned about Lean Six Sigma. If you look at what's happening, Amazon, Tesla, they have taken the concepts of Lean Six Sigma and team problem solving. And then with that foundation of simplifying and decomplexifying, processes and making them streamlined, they then put automation and robots and AI machine learning over top of that.
Right.
And that's what they've done with these platforms, right? Whether it's an Amazon platform that allows you to shop and do e-commerce or manage the what's known as the Amazon Web Services, which is how they provide the infrastructure for major high-tech companies and other companies to run all of their business over the internet.
Mm-hmm.
That's another platform that they've used by using a lot of this automation. And a similar type of thing with regards to Tesla. Tesla brings in some really sharp people that understand industrial engineering and Lean and Six Sigma principles, but then they augment that with innovation and breakthrough thinking and adaptability and coming up with these new ways of thinking about a new green and eco-friendly type of environment. And more importantly, Elon Musk puts in place these principles, these rewards, and these consequences for those who learn fast and adapt to change and innovate. And if you don't, move quickly, and move up, then you're basically moved out. So that's kind of the culture that they've created as well.
Yeah, well said. Well said. As much as our viewers should recognize the importance of these seven bullet points, these last three really hit on the mindset of that the new person fulfilling those roles or these roles that will be coming up and that are starting to surface really need to have these three things going for them. Self-starters and self-learners is becoming even tremendously more important. And the organizations that take advantage of those people that are doing that, they're the ones that are going to prosper as well. And people as well, individually, they're going to prosper. Hire leaders with SoftBank Tech, that's a must because we're getting more and more tech, of course, right? And people need to figure out if for instance, a leader is in a position right now, let's say they have the soft skills, but they don't have the tech skills, they need to figure out how to get the tech skills.
Right.
Right. They need to figure out niece, nephew, whoever who knows how to operate the apps and some of the computer programs need to go to them and have a sit down, a powwow with them and learn these programs and make sure that they know them because it's not going to go the opposite direction. No time in the foreseeable future. And then businesses promote people who can learn fast. Absolutely. They're going to be doing that because they have shareholder responsibility when it comes down to it. And adapt to change and innovate. That's going to be more and more important for people to understand that adapting to change, being able to quickly adapt to change even more so, and with innovation coming into play as well. Those three bullet points are going to be tremendously more important. Well, a lot of importance on that for people to gather the mindset, at least start gathering the mindset if they don't have it, that's what needs to be done for the foreseeable future.
Excellent point. When we wrote the chapter on this this topic in the book, we talked about the importance that technology has on forcing people to change, right? But human nature adaptability usually moves slower than technology changes, right? So you've gotta have kind of the self-discipline, that self-starter, that self-learner mentality. But now COVID, as we talk about in the book, accelerates the change even more. And it's typically a case that when you have a major crisis, that change is accelerated even at a greater pace. So telemedicine is a perfect
example. Absolutely.
More and more people have used telemedicine because of the coronavirus. More and more people have learned to use online tools and apps and Zoom and GoToMeeting and all of these other web-based tools that they've never had to use in the past, but now they have
Absolutely.
no choice but to learn today.
Yeah.
We saw the same thing happen with 9/11. It accelerated cloud computing. A lot of those companies that we lost in the Trade Center, they couldn't bring their companies back up online and get back to work. But there were a few companies that had brought their companies into the 21st century by putting things on the cloud, and they were able to, turn the lights back on, within a couple of days, as opposed to those other companies. So that drove a dramatic increase in the number of companies that moved over to cloud computing versus having their own software and databases and servers.
Right.
Same thing you're starting, to definitely see here. So those individuals who can understand that these trends are happening and get ahead of the curve, you guys are going to be have a great advantage over many of your peers and competitors in the marketplace.
Absolutely. Well said there. Aggressive companies, aggressive individuals will have the opportunity to take advantage of this, these opportunities that are coming up and that are presenting themselves right now. Both, yep.
So for those
Fantastic.
of you, go ahead, Gregson.
No, I said that's fantastic. That's good. It's a
So
good
for
thing.
those of you who may not see this, we'll just quickly touch on the key items. So one is build your Lean Six Sigma skills and team problem solving, right? The most difficult and challenging problems that we have today cannot be solved with individuals. It requires a team effort. So learn about personality differences, how to get along with different people, learn your own personality preference. Myers-Briggs, if you look that up online or look up 16personalities.com, you'll find some good information that'll teach you a lot about how your brain works and how you take in information, act on that information, and how others do as well, like your boss, give you some insight into how your boss thinks, which can improve your odds of getting a promotion. The next is automation and robots. Understand that these things are coming. If you have a knack for these sorts of things, you'll see like the examples in some of the pictures that we showed earlier. Tesla and others have robots, but they only have, maybe a few people, lots of robots. So people who understand automation and how to get those robots to do the right things, those are individuals that are going to continue to get hired because someone's got to run the robots and maintain things. AI machine learning. This is something that many of you are just going to have to learn. The good news is a lot of the coding is getting automated, so you're not going to have to go into all the ins and outs of coding, but at least go out on the internet, look at a few YouTube videos on an introduction to AI and machine learning. There's some really good information out there that'll at least put you at a level of ease and a certain level of confidence. And that's more important than being an eminent authority in AI. Next is thinking about, everything is so complex and so difficult and moving at such a rapid pace, like Grandison mentioned, that your ability to understand and synthesize those things and, simplify those complex things and communicate it to people is really critical, right? As a manager, as a leader, as a professional worker, you're going to be faced with things that are very complex. But the question is, can you simplify it and explain it in simple terms so average people can understand it? The green, eco-friendly, you can't get away from that. It's moving fast. It's coming at us. And whether you're for or against the incoming administration, Biden and others are likely to put more emphasis on this. They've already assigned a specific individual to focus, John Kerry, on the ecology and on the importance of climate change. So it's going to get a lot more attention, even at a national security level. The military has recognized the importance of understanding this because ecology changes impact migration patterns, and that creates strife and the likelihood of outbreaks and violence and potential wars. So the military is monitoring these things very closely.
Right.
Become the self-starter, the self-learner, like Grandison said. You can't just be a leader with just the soft skills. You also have to have the tech skills. And you can't be a leader that just is, a brute force with hard tech skills, but can't step back and know when to push, know when to ease back, know when to bring in the soft skills as well. And then finally, adapting to change so that you can learn fast and innovate. So those are the key things for those of you who are not able to see the screen during the podcast that we touch on. One other element we mentioned up here, and this gets back to simplification, is companies like Shopify. They're not a Tesla, they're not an Amazon, but what they've done is they created a platform where average people, small and medium-sized businesses, a lot of small businesses, can easily set up all of their internet and web-based tools. They can manage these things, they can handle their security, they can handle their online marketing and everything, they can handle their e-commerce, and they don't have to be coders or experts in this stuff. So those are some of the trends that we see as it relates to Amazon, Shopify, and Tesla that can directly impact your future in terms of the ability to survive during this pandemic and truly become an essential worker and not an expendable one.
Fantastic. Love that. Yeah, that's becoming more and more to the forefront of how people should start thinking in terms of these opportunities that are availing themselves right now as we're making this podcast. No doubt.
Well, great. Grandison, another great week with you. Enjoyed this. A really important topic. We'll have information posted out on a podcast and online with both the audio as well as the video of this, and also provide you a link to some resources of other things we have online that you can use to improve the rate of your skills and knowledge around the topic associated with all the new technology that's impacting our lives and our job futures. Thank you all. Have a great day.
All right.
And we'll talk with you next week.